from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, new wearable devices have been allowing people to track their personal data at all times. Now it's also making it easier for employers to collect information on their workers' productivity. This field of data collection, known as telematics, is projected to be an over $30 billion industry by 2018. And companies like UPS and Coca-Cola are already using it. We'll look at what the expanding industry means for workplace productivity and for workers' privacy, and that's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Monitoring of employees has already become commonplace with, according to a 2007 survey from the American Management Association, some 65% of employee internet use at work presently being monitored by employers. And as technology advances, the amount of monitoring will doubtless increase. And we wonder how you, our listeners, are feeling at work in the wake of increased monitoring, surveillance, and data collecting from those computers which you may be working at but are owned by the company you work for. I want to take this issue up and more in this morning's Open Forum Hour. And Esther Kaplan is joining us, the editor of the Investigative Fund at the Nation Institute. She wrote the cover article, the March 2015 issue of Harper's Magazine, about workplace monitoring. The article is called The Spy Who Fired Me, and she is in the blizzard in New York. Good to have you with us, Esther Kaplan. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Also want to welcome to this hour Ethan Bernstein, who is Assistant Professor of Leadership and Organizational Behavior at the Harvard Business School, and he joins us from Harvard this morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Also want to welcome Mark Sargent, who is in Indianapolis this morning and who is Vice President of Solutions Engineering with Telegis. And good morning, Mark Sargent. Welcome to you.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Glad to have you as well. And I want to begin, Esther Kaplan, if I may, with you and just point out to listeners, sort of to tally off of what I said earlier. Only Delaware and Connecticut, we find out from Esther Kaplan's article, require companies to inform employees that monitoring is actually taking place. And, you know, they can check your computer anytime through telematics, and we'll find out what telematics is in just a moment from Esther Kaplan. But let me just add to that, it's not your data. The company owns it. So tell us how this works with companies using telematics, Esther Kaplan.
Well, I think we're talking a little more broadly about this whole variety of methods of electronic monitoring that are now possible because of, I mean, they've really become available because of drops in prices in all of these, in GPS devices, in RFID devices, radio frequency tags, computer storage, cloud storage, computer processing. There's just all kinds of monitoring and data collection that's now possible that wasn't affordable even, you know, 8 years ago. And so companies are applying it in a wide variety of ways. Telematics is a piece of it where you're getting information from remote objects and vehicles. I'll leave it to Mark Sargent at Telegis to walk us through the really kind of stunning capacities that there are there. But there's also just, you know, old-fashioned being able to check what websites you're visiting, who you're emailing, who you're calling, who you're instant messaging. I mean, I say old-fashioned because that capacity's been around for a whole, you know, decade or more now. And it's become completely ubiquitous. And yes, even if you're at home telecommuting and you're using that company laptop, all of that information can be scooped up. And there's now devices that can even track your offline interactions. There's a company called Looped that, for example, launched a product in the fall where if you're at a conference, it can detect what booth you're at. It can detect who you're chatting with these tiny wearable badges. So we're getting to a point where really almost any form of interaction, communication, activity that we do at the workplace or on behalf of our employer can and in most cases is being tracked.
This kind of data scanning of all sorts, this monitoring is going on really, as you say, ubiquitously just about everywhere. And retail and even in fast foods like the Golden Arches of McDonald's. But what I think is important to emphasize is you've got algorithms to fit the store schedules, and you can get labor time right down to the minutes calculated.
Sure. So what's happening is you have the ability to maximize an employee's productivity on the job in an extremely minute way that wasn't possible in the past. Of course, there's always been efforts to increase employee efficiency, but now every slack bit of time can be squeezed out of an employee's schedule. What we've seen in places like grocery stores, clothing retail, fast food, is the schedules that are absolutely optimized around spikes in purchasing. So it decreases labor costs, concentrates the labor force at those peak times, but the downside is it's wreaking havoc in employees' lives. So people ending up with 3-hour schedules, 4-hour schedules, a shift that's canceled at last minute, a shift that's added at the last minute because it's canceled because there's a snowstorm like there is outside here in New York, or it's added because there's unexpectedly good weather, or any other indicator in this vast trove of data that suddenly there's going to be more traffic. And so, you know, especially for single parents or people trying to juggle multiple low-wage jobs to survive, it's just making it extremely difficult for them to lead their lives.
Could you just give us a little more of a picture, though, of what we're talking about here? We've been talking about telematics as just a piece of all of this, but Yeah. You get into a lot of UPS, and let's use that just for a moment as an example of what's going on.
Well, so UPS is telematics. There's also, in terms of retail and so on, there's these big systems called workforce management solutions, talent management solutions, big databases that pull cash register and other historical data to determine these schedules. UPS does use telematics, and so they send their drivers out now, and they were kind of pioneers in this area. They started this just introducing this nearly a decade ago. And so each truck has about 200 sensors. There's also a handheld device that each driver has that is sending GPS data. So is the vehicle itself. And a supervisor can, in real time, see exactly where a vehicle is. They can see if the seatbelt's buckled or not. They can see if that rear bulkhead door is open or closed. They can see where exactly the driver is when he scans a package, when he delivers the package. So there's just whether the truck's idling. So there's all kinds of data being collected. And the idea is to create fuel efficiencies, to do more streamlined forms of vehicle maintenance, and also, again, to create these efficiencies of productivity in the workforce. So over the period when UPS introduces telematics, you see domestic package delivery in the United States increasing by almost 1.5 million packages, while the drivers who are doing this decrease by at least 1,000, if not more. So each driver is just doing significantly higher number of deliveries on each day.
Which also affects driver safety, as you point out in your article.
Yeah, well, I mean, what do you have to do to, what corners do you have to cut to meet those new quotas? And I'm talking about from 80 stops up to 110 stops just in the space of a few years. So you jaywalk, right? You don't buckle your seatbelt. Drivers buckle their seatbelts behind them, so it looks like the seatbelts are buckled on the telematics report, but they're not really buckled. You do stuff. You zoom through a yellow light. You do a lot of stuff that could be endangering people around you, could be endangering yourself. There was a case of a driver who was hit a year or so ago during the holiday delivery rush, ended up in a coma for a week and a half. I mean, the data from the telematics, UPS told me, says safety measures have increased. But the question is, are drivers gaming the system so the telematics is showing that, the reports show that? Is is safety really increasing on the ground? Can you maintain safety? Can you lift safely? Can you deliver safely when the productivity pressures become that intense?
Again, Esther Kaplan with us from New York City is editor of the Investigative Fund at the Nation Institute and wrote the cover article in Harper's March 2015 issue called The Spy Who Fired Me. Let me go to Mark Sargent of Telegis, who is vice president of solutions engineering. And Mark, your company is actually has Coca-Cola and Walmart as clients. And you're tracking, I mean, this is tracking software. This is telematics that you use with them. We've already had some red flags raised by Esther Kaplan, and I'd like you to address those first, if you could.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of the red flags that I heard were certainly like, you know, gaming the system and seatbelts that may be behind. And we certainly have ways of looking for that. I mean, if we see seatbelts are going unbuckled for long durations of time, I mean, that is another telltale signal. But I mean, really, these solutions are being purchased because of the competitive environment we live in. And, you know, companies are buying these to connect their people to vehicles, to work, and connecting their clients. And they're providing a lot of benefit in those regards, as well as there are, like, measurable improvements in safety. We have one client that had, seven, fatalities before they introduced telematics, and they have not had a single one since. And that was purely just focusing on maximum speed, being measured above 70 miles per hour with some very large vehicles. And so the ability for us to help them understand that has really helped them become safer on the road for not only their employees, but for the other drivers in the community. So I think there's a tremendous amount of value from this, from a safety perspective. But yeah, there definitely is a lot of benefit that clients are looking for from a productivity benefit. This is helping companies, improve their fuel economies and have drastic reductions in fuel consumption in general, which is, environmentally responsible also. So, we're seeing a lot of, ancillary benefits as a result of this.
And you emphasize those benefits in light of the concerns that many have that perhaps there's too much pressure on the driver to conform when these numbers go up and the bar gets higher?
What I tend to see is that that drivers don't know how they should be measured until these sorts of metrics are put in place. And we have like a solution that we call Coach, Telegis Coach. And this solution kind of like lets drivers see what they're being measured on and even has a discuss feature so that they can provide feedback if they felt like there was an area they were unfairly measured perhaps. Or there was maybe a reason for some event that occurred. We have seen that drivers have adopted this, and it even has become incentivized so that, their pay could actually be, benefited by, doing some of these things, operating safely, meeting certain productivity levels and just the expectations that we feel that they can meet. But I don't think it's trying to squeeze every last minute. It's just trying to, like, here's the resources we have. Here's the demands upon the business. How can we maximize that, and how can we help improve drivers' lives? A lot of these are driver tools. There is a driver shortage out there. I mean, the long-haul space, the logistics and transportation space, they have to do everything they possibly can to keep drivers happy because of the turnover rate. I mean, it's plus 90% with some companies. And so they're looking for tools to give these drivers to make their experience in these vehicles better.
Well, they're also looking out of some concern for what is often described as employee time theft. Although there's also in this whole debate the concern of wage theft by employers, which simply boils down to, I guess, the premise that they can hit their drivers or whomever they're monitoring to a much greater degree in terms of, once again, their expectations.
Certainly, perhaps. But many of these vehicles, they're also being, there's a regulatory component. So there's DOT compliance aspect to this. And these rules and regulations are getting very, very complex. And to leave that up to a driver gets frustrating. And so these tools are helping simplify those types of requirements upon them, because these are mandates. And if they get pulled over by a law enforcement officer, or they have to stop at a checkpoint, I mean, these are the kind of things that they're expected to produce. And if they have any inaccuracies, I mean, it certainly affects not only the company, but it affects the driver and his performance and his rating as well. So, I mean, there is that the compliance component that we would certainly say is a huge benefit to the driver.
And Mark Sargent, again, is the Vice President of Solutions Engineering at Telegis. He's with us This morning from Indianapolis, Ethan Bernstein is with us from Harvard. He's assistant professor of leadership and organizational behavior there in the Harvard Business School. And Professor Bernstein, I know you've alluded to a study that was done of Chinese factory workers. This gets into a broader question of how employees feel about being watched or, for that matter, being tracked. And to some extent, your data shows less productive and maybe even in many instances depressed.
So in my research, when I think about increasing transparency or the alternate increasing privacy for productivity, I really ask two primary questions. First, does the supervision that Esther and Mark are describing offer the potential for better work? And the answer on that is almost always yes. There's always that theoretical potential. But then you have to ask the question, who's using the data and how is it being used? And if that's not transparent, then you have a problem. So you referenced my work in a Chinese factory. In that case, it was really a physical visible space. And what we did to increase productivity was we actually provided the lines with privacy. We put, if you will, like hospital bed curtains, literally curtains around several lines. And they experienced much better productivity as a result. Why? Because that meant that the transparency of the floor was actually limited to a certain set of individuals who could focus their work on that and not worry about the fact that when they were being watched, they were having to meet the expectations of a far larger group of individuals. So really, when I think about this conversation, it's not a question of whether or not this data that's being collected is valuable. When we think of the sensors on the back of our cars on that bumper that beep when we get too close to the car, it's not a question of whether or not that's a good thing. It's a question of, for the driver, it's very helpful, but do we really want our insurance company hearing about it every time we do that? And so if you think about it within the workplace, it's a question of, is it a top-down or bottom-up question? So right now, everyone is walking around with a supercomputer in their pockets, a phone. Many of the data that we're talking about could be used by individuals for the sake of improving their own performance as feedback. When it gets used as a monitoring device, when supervision becomes supervision, that's when I think you run into more problems.
And those problems amount to, in many instances, effect on creativity and innovation from your study?
So there are a number of different outcomes. One is the workarounds that Esther was describing, where whatever's not being watched ends up sort of squeaking through the cracks. We believe, I think, that someday we will come up with technology that will be able to observe beyond human ingenuity to avoid being observed. So far, I just haven't seen that be the case. Most of the time, workers are smart enough to figure out what's being watched and find a way to do what they need to do when they're not being watched to make their targets. The other thing that does happen is you think about when you're on a stage performing versus when you're in a practice room practicing for that performance. When you're practicing, you're much more experimental because you're not worrying about meeting other people's expectations. When we're out on stage, that changes to a performance. It changes to something we do better rehearsed than unrehearsed. And so if what we're looking for is more and more knowledge work to be unrehearsed and creative, we may actually be stamping out some of that creativity by putting people on a stage, especially when they don't know who's watching them and for what purpose.
You're talking about performance pressure, essentially. But we have organizations in industry, and this is becoming, as we said earlier, burgeoning and money-making industry, to put it mildly. But a company like Kronos, which is a workplace management data collection company that practices telematics, they're essentially saying this can be used to promote good and it can be used for workers' rights and, again, self-monitoring. In fact, we're going to hear from somebody who has a new app along those lines who I'm sure will speak to us on that level. To what degree does that balance, for example, some of the downsides that you've been talking about?
So I've actually done quite a bit of research in this area. I've done work with a client of Kronos's as well as with Workplace Systems, which is a competitor to their product. And it's not necessarily in the product itself that's the question. It's how it's implemented. You can imagine that if employees in these retail chains had access to the data that their supervisors are looking at, they might actually be able to better cater their schedules to their own needs, from their family needs, personal needs, as well as the needs of the organization. They might actually be able to have more stable schedules because to the extent that we can use past data to predict future customer streams, which is not perfect but can be done to some extent, we can actually better staff a stable amount of workers over time. And actually, in many cases, when they implement these systems, as Esther says in her article, the amount of labor hired goes up, not down, because they've been understaffing as a result of not being able to properly predict customer behavior. So all of these things can be good, but without enabling the workers to see the data, that becomes a problem. One other example from another research site of mine, there's a startup actually in the Bay Area called Module Q that's about transforming this kind of activity from top down to bottom up. They're committed to giving creative workers, primarily salespeople, access to their own personal data in terms of their communication and what they need to do in order to close deals such that they can act upon it when it's a work in progress. That's in contrast to some of the other Salesforce optimization tools that are out there that are really intended to get the salespeople to put data into a system that then the managers can tell them which calls they should do and how often they should do them.
And again, Ethan Bernstein is Assistant Professor of Leadership and Organizational Behavior with the Harvard Business School. Let me have Chris Duggan enter this conversation. He's co-founder and CEO of Better Works. Chris Duggan is actually not only co-founder but CEO of BetterWorks, and they're a smartwatch app that lets businesses track their employees' performance. Chris Duggan, welcome to the program. Good to have you aboard here.
Hi, good morning, Michael. Thank you.
This is, from all that you're heralding, a collaborator. This is not just the employers. It's the employees working with the employees.
Absolutely. In fact, I mean, our company provides goal-setting software, and we do it in a very kind of modern and collaborative way inside companies. And you mentioned that we have a smartwatch app. We also have a web app and an iPhone app. And what we found is that knowledge workers want to work in a much more open and collaborative manner. They want to do things like check in on their goals frequently throughout the year, not just kind of a very traditional annual process. And they want to be able to measure their progress and see how they're doing and see how others are doing and learn from that and really start to drive self-improvement and reach their full potential.
And this includes managers and executives, right?
Absolutely. But it's not just a manager tool or an executive tool. We've heard mentioned earlier around kind of a top-down mentality. I think this is really more about the spirit of self-improvement and a bottoms-up kind of concept of working openly and collaboratively and tracking our own progress and reaching our full potential, being the best that we can be.
Yeah, but who's paying for this? The employer, right?
So the company obviously derives a lot of value from this, which is, you know, creating a culture of openness and trust, driving performance and results from their employees and across their teams, fostering much more kind of cross-functional collaboration than they might have previously seen. And, you know, I think they also realize that this is the way that they have to engage their millennial workforce. These millennials aren't going to wait for kind of an annual review process or infrequent feedback or lack of purpose or clarity or direction in kind of what's expected in their roles. And the millennials want to have this kind of measurement-based experience. They actually know how many Facebook friends they have, how many Twitter followers they have, and it's a kind of a culture of measurement, and then they come to work.
Chris, let me jump in here because I want to give the phone number out. I know listeners want to respond to all this, and now's the opportunity to do so. Our toll-free number is available, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Join us or email forum@kqed.org. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're devoting this hour to, well, finding out about bosses digitally watching employees, and that is a fact of life. In fact, it's become more and more widespread, and as the technology expands, it will probably become even more of an issue. We certainly welcome your involvement in the program. If you have something you'd like to say or a question you want to ask any of our panelists, feel free to join us now. Again, our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. There are other ways, of course, of joining our conversation. You can simply email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Our guests are Ethan Bernstein, who is Assistant Professor of Leadership and Organizational Behavior with the Harvard Business School, and Mark Sargent, who is Vice President of Solutions Engineering with Telegis Incorporated, and Esther Kaplan, editor of the investigative fund at the Nation Institute and author of the cover article of the March 2015 issue of Harper's Magazine about workplace monitoring. The article is called "The Spy Who Fired Me." And again, we certainly want to hear from you, our listeners, in terms of your responses, your concerns, your enthusiasm, whatever it is with respect to workplace monitoring. Chris Duggan is also on the line, and I just want to finish up with him. He's co-founder and CEO of BetterWorks, a smartwatch app that lets businesses track their employees' performance. Chris, I think we want to get a visualization of exactly how the smartwatch works. Can you do that for us?
Yeah, so imagine, and this could be on your smartwatch, it could be on your phone, or it could be on a web application, but imagine that you could set goals, the things that you want to achieve, 3, 4, 5 key things for this quarter. You can see what everybody else's key objectives are for the quarter, and it's a very open and collaborative kind of experience. And then as you check in your progress, as you make progress throughout this period of time, you're sharing those updates to the rest of your team members. You're actually even able to see what the CEO and other key leaders in the company, kind of how their progress is evolving. You can attach yourself to key initiatives in the company. And, you know, this is a culture of measurement, but it's also a culture of trust and transparency and openness. And those kinds of approaches are what's really the key to driving, you know, maximum engagement with the workforce, and really the key to unlocking, you know, limitless business results.
It's also a key, presumably, to how employers are going to perhaps use the data in some instances against what may be perceived as some indolence or shirking the job, or, you know, the progress is being checked here all along, isn't it?
So I think that's right. And I mean, you know, if we're going to, you know, talk about, you know, do these technologies have the potential to really unlock a lot of potential inside companies? Absolutely. Do they also have the potential to maybe be misused by certain types of companies? Or is it a magic wand to kind of course correct on a failing culture inside an organization? I mean, I think, you know, those are obvious questions. And, you know, the reality is, if you are a high-performing company and you really care about trust, openness, collaboration, engagement, and results, then using these technologies in a very positive way, quite a successful strategy.
And yet, I'm sure you've heard the argument that it can erode trust for an employee to feel he or she is being monitored all the time.
So I think one key thing here, maybe the difference between these kind of wearables and devices that go inside, you know, logistical transportation vehicles and the kinds of things I'm talking about, is that these knowledge workers are opting in to share their progress. And when they do that, they actually are becoming great communicators. They're updating and creating signals that are valuable to the company. And hopefully they can even, you know, drive self-improvement and productivity, because you're learning about your own kind of opportunities and areas and areas for improvement.
Well, excuse me, Chris, when you say they opt in, if an employer says, we're paying for the service and you have to opt in, does an employee really have any choice?
Well, I think the degree to which they participate is really up to them. You know, I think that the key here is that, you know, sunlight is the greatest disinfectant. And, you know, creating this kind of open culture, like we've seen with many, many very high-performing organizations like Google and others, where they have this kind of culture of openness and trust and transparency, creating these kinds of opportunities for learning about yourself, learning what others are working on, being able to connect to bigger picture initiatives in the company, feeling like you have clarity of purpose and that you have, you know, focus and that you know that your work matters. These are the things that are actually fundamentally motivating for people at work. And I think technology can do really its part in facilitating that kind of mentality.
All right. Chris Duggan, again, is co-founder and CEO of BetterWorks, and we're going to get to your calls and emails. Before we do, Esther Kaplan, what about the notion that this collaborative work can be essentially enhancing to trust, and especially if you have a culture that pretty much advances that?
Well, I suspect that if any of these systems are implemented in a really sophisticated and forward-looking way, this is possible. But if you look at the data, I mean, if we take telematics, for example, I found one survey that found levels of driver resistance at 80%. So if in broad strokes, these systems are not being implemented in a way that is making the employees who have to exist within them day to day happy at all. And there's plenty of academic data picking up on what Ethan said, showing that when you're observed, there's kind of a part of your brain caught up with that, and it can actually hamper your performance unless it's a super rote task. If it's even as complex as navigating traffic in a busy street, let alone knowledge work, that fact that you're being observed can actually hamper your creativity and your focus. And the other thing is that a lot of these systems, part of its implementation, but a lot of the systems don't have that worker participation possibility even built in. If we think about the big workforce management systems used, for example, by retailers, you know, when employees get saddled with these shifts at the last minute, they've created Facebook pages, for example, with Starbucks, to try to go swap their shifts and get someone to cover their shift or pick up a shift because they don't have enough that week. So there's these sophisticated systems being implemented at the enterprise level, but they so shut out employee needs that employees are developing their own patchwork systems on the side to compensate for the chaos they're creating. So while the potential, I think, is there, the way these systems are being implemented now on the whole is making a lot of employees unhappy, to say the least.
All right, let me bring our callers on, and we go first to you. Ralph, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to comment. I'm the IT manager for a software company here in the Bay Area, and I keep getting requests from users for a new product, a fairly new product called Rescue Time, which is a product for, you know, people who use computers all the time to tell you, you know, what things that you're doing on your computer has your focus. So, you know, it can give you a report and say you spent a whole bunch of time looking at websites that you probably shouldn't be looking at, as opposed to, you know, paying attention to your Visual Studio's window. And for the people who have requested it in my office, every single one of them has remarked about how it's increased their productivity remarkably. And it's one of these spy things that just reports to them. There's a module for it where it can report to management, but we just haven't enabled that at all. So it's only private data back to themselves.
Well, I thank you for those comments. Mark Sargent, can I get a response from you?
Yeah, I think it actually goes back to the some of the comments that we've already heard, which is the way that these systems are implemented can have a direct and measurable impact on, you know, employee productivity as well as satisfaction. So in that instance, yeah, that's a great implementation where it's kind of reporting back to the individual and user of that particular PC to let them know, you know, how well they did from a productivity perspective. And I think this gamification of information is becoming prevalent. From, you know, what websites you may be seeing to how productive you are to how safe you are. But this measurable capability and giving this back to the end user or that employee level has had like a dramatic impact on, you know, self-improvement of behavior. And I think I've heard similar comments from the other panelists.
Well, let me thank Ralph for his call and move on to another caller. Madeline, thanks for waiting. Join us. You're on.
Hi. I read the article in Harper's, and Esther starts out talking about how you may notice the frequency of packages, UPS or FedEx packages, being left at the door without your doorbell being rung. I'm just wondering what happens to customer service in all this.
Thank you, Madeline. In fact, that is an important part of the article, and I want to go back to it. But let me go to Professor Bernstein on this simply because I think some of his study can tell us something about the effect on customer service.
So it's interesting that we're talking about transparency to supervisors and transparency oneself, but we haven't talked about transparency to the customer. It has been shown by actually colleagues of mine here, Ryan Buell among them, that when we can create operations that are much more transparent to the customer, that can actually be an excellent substitute for transparency by the supervisor and can be even more motivating as opposed to demotivating for the worker. You know, all of this gets around, I think it was Chris who mentioned Brandeisian, the Brandeisian quote, sunlight is the greatest disinfectant. Brandeis was also, with in his famous article with Warren, the person who mentioned privacy. In this case, it's really a question, as we've been discussing, about who should have the data and how that data should enable trust. So we tend to think within management ranks that if management needs to see what we're doing, they don't trust us. And management, of course, is more likely to trust us when they can see us. So that's a real paradox to be broken. It can often be broken, to the comment of the caller, by providing transparency to the customer, because that customer salesperson relationship, for example, or customer rep relationship can be much more enhanced by providing that kind of data across that barrier.
Well, once more, looking at UPS for a moment, Noel writes, what really resonated with me about Kaplan's article was her example of UPS packages not being left with recipients. The workers don't even bother ringing the doorbell. Reminds me of how standardized testing leads to less learning time in order to teach to the test, so they waste all this time on that, even though the stated goal is having kids learn becomes a perverse incentive. And also another comment on UPS from John in Livermore. John, join us.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question comment is regarding UPS. The comments earlier were more about the increase in package delivery rate and stuff like that, but they also use this system to help drivers better navigate a route. You know, the drivers actually get some benefit from this by having a route laid out for them that's more efficient, and it also improves customer service by being they can redirect a driver to pick up a package that has a last-minute pickup by a driver who's closest by or who has the best option to be able to do that. Don't drivers receive a benefit from that?
Yeah, Esther Kaplan?
Yeah, I think they do. I think my sense from the drivers I talk to is they see that there are certain benefits to the system. I mean, starting with the way packages are scanned and loaded onto the truck. For example, now when they make a stop, they know that they have 11 packages at that stop, and they know where they are on the shelf, whereas before they might realize 2 hours later that they missed one package at a stop and have to circle back. There are a lot of efficiencies that the system has created that the drivers appreciate. Then there's all the ones that they really don't, and that may be leading to greater injuries. So again, I feel like with these systems, there really is the potential, as Mark and others have said, that if you really do design these with the needs of the employees in mind as well, you could be creating a win-win situation. These technologies are in their infancy in many cases, and there's a lot of hiccups going on right now. And I think that, hopefully in the years that come, companies are going to learn about how to do this in a way that doesn't create, a real pushback from their workforce and create injuries and also chaos in the lives of their workforce.
Let me read some online comments from our listeners before I go to more of your calls. Here's Christina writes, I wish Google would apply some of its tech savvy towards monitoring and mentoring their Google Express delivery drivers, whom I see zipping around Mountain View while texting or otherwise being distracted by information on their cell phones. This, of course, is illegal, but it's also dangerous and irresponsible. It does not inspire me to want to take advantage of the service at all. I'm sure other delivery companies are just as prone to turn a blind eye towards such behavior by their drivers, so it will likely continue until someone is killed and a high-profile lawsuit follows. I want monitoring of these drivers, not just wearable tech on them. Another listener writes, I worked two different jobs where management systems were used to increase productivity. Both were abused. One even questioned a trip to the restroom, saying I should wait until my break, but that's not always possible. The other just kept adding work without changing quotas, so one had to work longer hours. Management often seems unable to resist a proclivity to exploit workers with these measurement systems. I left both jobs for ones where workers were treated more humanely. And another listener says, I'm surprised and disturbed that you have no union or other employee advocate on this program. Sometimes, apologies, that's just the fault of the fact that we want a lot of different voices and a lot of different points of view. But Ben writes, and let me read this online, this is why the decay of unions is so dangerous. The owners of these companies' number one goal is to maximize profits and meeting productivity levels. They could care less about the happiness of their employees. People are being paid less and less for doing more and more, and now even when someone needs to catch their breath, they will get harassed by their employer. Another listener writes, a less draconian but no less unsettling advent is of employers asking exempt employees to fill out electronic time cards detailing their workday by project and task. This requirement by itself is not objectionable, if not very welcome either, in pursuit of project management, except when the data collection tool lights red lights, when an individual's daily schedule totals less than 8 hours per day or less than 40 hours per week. For exempt employees who are not eligible for overtime compensation, this appears to be coercive and in violation of the Natural Labor Relations Act of 1935, and this practice is becoming common. One more listener comment. If it's to ensure safety and legality, then such monitoring is sensible from a company's legal point of view. If it's to drive workers ever harder as a sweatshop tactic, heedless of the damage it does to the workers or the public, then it's being used stupidly from a company's legal point of view. Let's hear from some more of our listeners by phone. And Chris, join us here on the air.
Good morning. I apologize. I missed the gentleman's name who was commenting about millennials' needs for positive feedback from their coworkers. But
that was Chris Duggan of Better Works. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. I used to work in a tech company where we were, this was about 5 to 10 years ago, we were told that we had to add priority codes to our email subject lines so that people could get a better understanding of when they needed to read emails then or delay reading them. And the company ended up canning that idea because it was too time-consuming. So when I hear comments that millennials need the sort of social reinforcement and positive feedback from their coworkers by spending time blogging about or putting on Facebook their accomplishments at work, it seems like a colossal waste of time, and it seems like a giant, frankly, invasion of privacy. I mean, who wants to spend their time bragging to coworkers about what they did or didn't do and then face either the consequences of not doing something or the resentment of their coworkers because maybe someone's brown-nosing more than somebody else? It struck me as a very deaf response from Mr. Duggan that millennials need this sort of reward system to motivate them as opposed to just getting their work done and not worrying about social feedback.
No, I thank you for that call, Chris, and I appreciate it. I wonder, Ethan Bernstein, though, we do keep hearing a lot of reports about millennials as being different kinds of workers and needing to be motivated and resenting feedback and everything. I mean, I've certainly seen some research along these lines. Can you tell us or illuminate anything for us on that line?
Well, I think to some extent this is a question that the future will answer. This conversation we're having is going to end in one of two ways, either management, organizations, potentially unions, everyone's going to become more enlightened about how to do this, or just over time, millennials and others will teach us how to be desensitized to the idea of always being watched. I happen to believe that actually in this particular instance, because millennials are human beings and because I study human beings, human behavior hasn't changed much. So to the extent that you are watched, you are more likely to comply. To the extent that you are not being watched, you're more likely to experiment, be creative, and try something new. And I don't know that that's going to change. But perhaps the future will prove me wrong.
I wonder if you could just, if I could follow that up with you, Ethan Bernstein, with an email coming from a listener named John who wants to know if this is really any different from Taylorism at the beginning of the 20th century. Taylorism is that principle or practice of scientific management. And he goes on to say, management has always feared worker autonomy and has always looked for ways to control how work is done in order to limit the power of workers.
So Taylor and scientific management, this is to some extent pig iron, only on a much larger scale that Taylor could never have imagined. But again, that's the question of how managers decide to implement it. So over the last 100 years, my field of organizational behavior has dealt with the questions of how to think about scientific management in the context of human behavior and how to think about driving organizations that do have trust and collaboration and mutual respect, as opposed to the idea that you truly take a person, specialize them on one particular part of a very specific task, and have them do that over and over and over
again. So a lot of this does vary workplace culture to workplace culture, as you're suggesting.
It does, although the one thing I might caveat that, I'm not sure that a really, really good, high-performing workplace culture can truly mitigate the effect of complete radical transparency. I'm not sure that at the end of the day, just because I really truly trust the people that I'm working with and I'm comfortable with them, I'm still going to be comfortable having them watch my every move over the course of a day.
And Mark Sargent, if I could go back to you. Listener says, this is very interesting. I appreciate the quest for efficiency. However, statistics show that while workplace productivity has steadily increased over the past 30 years, wages have remained stagnant or declined. How does all this factor into the discussion? How do you see it, Mark Sargent?
Yeah, well, we've certainly seen clients that have taken this information and utilized it in like a leaderboard fashion and pretty much gamified this information. And they're compensating based upon it. So they're incentivizing these employees by you know, by their performance, by safer behavior, you know, by just being, finding ways of being more efficient. So I think there are ways where this can be enabled to help an organization, like, attract the highest talent, and because of some of these systems that they do put in place.
And here's an email from a listener. I just want to have this on the record here, who writes, people worry about Big Brother in government. Big Brother is in corporations. This is a major joke. All this is a new way for guards to monitor prisoners. Let me bring another caller in here, and that's you, Henry. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. This is a complex and important topic to improve or optimize worker autonomy and generally improve this kind of system. I think, and for many other reasons, we should have a guaranteed minimum income in the U.S. and other places. You could implement it along the lines of the Alaskan state dividend or a negative income tax. And, you know, we're a wealthy enough society so that we can improve people's autonomy and have a floor of purchasing power, which would have many other benefits as well.
All right. I thank you for that suggestion. And let me go back to Esther Kaplan, who wrote the cover article in the March 2015 Harper's Magazine called The Spy Who Fired Me. Like to hear a little bit about this work diary that you wrote about, Esther Kaplan, for Odesk, I guess is the name of the company. These are all these snapshots. It really, to me, looked like a surveillance system.
Yeah, well, all of these things we're talking about are in great part surveillance systems. I mean, they have other functions as well.
This one seemed in some ways almost dramatically so. Could you tell
us?
Yeah,
well, so, I mean, huge numbers of Americans are now working remotely or are working as independent or contract workers, maybe as their full income, maybe as part of their income, and a number of them are working through these online marketplaces. I looked at one called Odesk, as you mentioned, and what it does is if you agree to do your work through this online work diary, Odesk guarantees that you're going to be paid. So that's what most people do. And that means that the client who hires someone through Odesk gets a screenshot of that person's home computer in every 10-minute increment. And they get tabulations of their keystrokes and their mouse clicks and so on in one-minute increments. So you really are, you could hire someone in Texas, you could hire someone in Indonesia, and you can be looking in at their home computer. If an instant message pops up or, you know, they go to iTunes to pick a song, you're going to see all of that. You're really seeing right into their personal computer. It's pretty stunning.
You're getting snapshots all the time, really, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then if the person doing the work doesn't want you to see that snapshot because they're able to review and delete them because it is something really private, they lose that 10 minutes of pay. So you're really, employees are literally paying for the right to privacy in this case.
This is sounding, examples like that, Ethan Bernstein, more and more like a Brave New World, and I'd be curious to know, with all the research that you've done and thinking and reflecting on it, where you think it's headed. Are there going to be sensors everywhere in every workplace? Monitoring everywhere of all kinds of new sort of world technologies that we can't even conceive?
Oh, the technology will continue to advance. And so the question for us as human beings, leaders, managers, employees, is how to use it productively. And so this conversation, I've been very pleased that this conversation has not been per se about a right to privacy, but when is privacy productive? When is transparency productive? To whom? For what purpose? If we start to use transparency as a management lever and not simply assume that more is better, then I think our organizations will get better and increasingly better as the technology advances. But yes, we're not going to stop the advancement of sensing technology over the course of the next 10, 20 years.
Can I get you to weigh in here, Mark Sargent?
Yeah, I think I would totally agree with that statement. I mean, this is going to continue to increase. We're going to see more and more technology. We're going to see more capabilities to monitor different things on the vehicle, and whether it's to monitor vehicle health, safety, you know, productivity, et cetera. But, you know, they're also being required, you know, from various other perspectives. You know, for example, Hurricane Sandy, when that blew through, you know, we were utilizing this technology to share amongst many of the, you know, responders and some of the agencies that have to recover services. And so, you know, there's incredible, like, advantages by implementing this technology and sharing it amongst others and utilizing the data in very positive fashions as well.
Well, advantages notwithstanding, Esther Kaplan, I'd like a final word from you about where all this tracking of employees is going to lead. If we can track it, I don't mean to suggest that you can look in a crystal ball, but what do you see up ahead?
Well, one of the things that's striking to me is that a lot of these advances have happened just in these recent years since the financial crash, at a time when unionization is on the decline and the labor market has been very slack. So it's been developed according to management priorities, and there's been little ability for workers to push back and basically insist that the systems accommodate their needs. As the labor market tightens, as these dynamics change, we've actually seen big changes just recently. Starbucks and others have begun to make concessions about giving advance notice to workers about their schedules as the labor market tightens. I think we may see companies have to take into account the way these systems impact their employees and build that in. And the providers are going to have to start building in, I hope, more responsiveness in terms of employees' needs being able to be yet another data point that's scooped into these systems. So, I mean, that would be the optimistic view. I don't think that's the only path that this will take.
I thank Esther Kaplan for being with us. Her cover article can be found in the March 2015 issue of Harper's. It's called The Spy Who Fired Me. Also, thanks to Ethan Bernstein of Harvard Business School and Mark Sargent of Telegis. He's Vice President of Solutions Engineering there, and Ethan Bernstein is Assistant Professor of Leadership and Organizational Behavior. And thank you, our listeners. Also, thanks to Chris Duggan, who joined us from BetterWorks. We have another hour up ahead. We're going to talk, actually, to local novelist who's won awards and who has a new novel out, Lolita Tademi. Join us for that. And remember that Forum is brought to you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.